The message in my book is if we allow them to get away with this brazen abuse of power that is directly targeting our fellow Americans, you may not be the one targeted today. But if we allow this to become the new norm, I guarantee you it's just a matter of time. It will be you, it will be your children, it will be your family and your freedom that you wake up one day and it's gone. And the country that we love is no longer there.
Welcome back to the Kevin Roberts Show. As you've heard me say often in these conversations that I've done for a couple of years with great Americans and, for that matter, great people from around the world, I love talking to every one of our guests. It's one of the best parts of my job. I've really been looking forward to the conversation with this next great American patriot because her story, her life story, her political journey is not just fascinating to us at Heritage. I think it's inspiring for certainly us and probably for all of you. That's a way of saying it is a great pleasure to welcome Tulsi Gabbard to
the Kevin Roberts Show. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So, four terms in Congress.
Yes.
A combat veteran, an Army Reserve officer. Thank you, ma'am, for all of that service.
I am grateful. Thank you.
And you're still smiling.
Oh, yes. Every day.
I told you off camera, our older kids, all of our kids, but our older kids in particular who are in college, find your story very inspiring. Mm. And what they tell me when I ask them why, because I get it, but I want to know why they say why, is your eternal optimism. Mm. What's the root of that?
It's rooted in my faith in God and the knowledge that God's unconditional love for every one of us inspires hope. How can we lose hope when we know that God's love for us is eternal? So, as long as God exists, and God will always exist, we will always have cause to be hopeful. There's no question about the forces of darkness working against us, working against the well-being of the American people, working against the vision that our founders had for our country and for all of us, all so that they can hold on to and gain more power. But we cannot lose hope. Because the mission that I know you have leading the Heritage Foundation, the mission that I have just as an American citizen who's gone through and had a few experiences, this is a no-fail mission to save our country right now. This is why I wrote the book, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. I go into detail about the experiences that I've had over the last 20 years of being a Democrat, how when I first joined the Democratic Party when I was 21 years old in Hawaii, and fast forward to where we are today, it is wholly unrecognizable from the party that I joined. I know there are a lot of folks out there in the country who may still consider themselves Democrats or not, but who feel that same frustration and sadness, frankly, that we have people in power who don't care for our country. They don't care for our Constitution. They don't care for our freedom and are becoming more and more brazen in abusing their power, taking our freedom away, putting their own self-serving interests and the interests of the Democrat elite ahead of the interests of the American people. So we've got to stop them to save our country.
Thank you for the comment, but also thank you for writing the book. I mean, that takes some courage when you have been not just any member of Congress, but considered one of the rising stars of the Democrat Party. And to walk away from that, but also to lean into the recognition, the realization that you had about how the Democrat Party, to quote Reagan, left you.
Yes.
What do you think caused that big shift inside the Democrat Party as an institution?
It's a good question. You know, I think over time, and I saw it throughout the 8 years that I was in Congress. It felt like there was a slow build in the party moving away from being the party of the people, the big tent open party, the party that was known for being messy because there was so much free speech and different ideas and different backgrounds, the party that stood up for civil liberties, the party that had leaders in it who called for an end to unnecessary regime change wars in other parts of the world. What I saw over time was a party leadership, elite, who became more concerned for themselves than for their purpose, for why they were put in these positions of power in the first place. You know, what exactly drove that? I'm sure there are many different contributing factors, but all of them, unfortunately, have led to where we are today. And that should be of concern, not just to Democrats or Republicans or independents. It is of concern to all of us because it affects all of us as Americans. They're not discriminating against who is affected by their attack on our freedoms. Yes, today they are attacking people who they call MAGA Republicans. Well, I talk in my book in detail about who are these MAGA Republicans they're targeting. Well, I've met a lot of them. And they are maybe people who voted for Trump, maybe people who didn't vote for Trump, but they are the Moms for Liberty standing up and speaking out courageously to protect their right to have input over their kids' education. It is people who are standing up and saying, hey, no, I am not for censorship of free speech. I am not for the White House, the Biden White House, directing the FBI to push X or Facebook or these other institutions to ban certain Americans' voices. The list goes on and on, unfortunately, but the message in my book is sounding the alarm bells for these threats that we face today because they are setting a new precedent that if we allow them to get away with this brazen abuse of power that is directly targeting our fellow Americans, you may not be the one targeted today. But if we allow this to become the new norm, I guarantee you it's just a matter of time. It will be you. It will be your children. It will be your family and your freedom that you wake up one day and it's gone. And the country that we love is no longer there.
And as I try to say, and some of my Heritage colleagues do, when we're commenting on the various Trump trials, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what someone thinks about President Trump.
That's
politically
right.
Or personally. The point is, if the regime can do this to us, to him, it will do it to us. And in fact, it's doing this to us in
exactly.
increasing ways, as you mentioned and outlined in the book. And it leads me to remember how important it is that they use this epithet mm-hmm. of MAGA Republican.
Yeah.
And they foist it on people, many of whom aren't just former Democrats. Some of them are registered Democrats today.
Yes.
And it's because it isn't about even Republican or Democrat as divisive as sometimes that has been
yeah.
in our lifetimes, but it really is about radical left versus common sense.
Right.
My question for you, because you not only write about civil discourse in ways that I think is important, but you model it. How do we get out of this divisiveness in a way that we don't betray our principles?
It is important that we, every one of us as individuals, recognize our responsibility in breaking through that, whether it's a hyper-partisan divide or an identity politics divide or you pick which label or which wedge is being used to tear us apart and turn us one against the other. And whether it's in our conversations within our family, we all have interesting and unique, diverse thoughts within our families or opinions or coworkers or people who you're connected with on social media. Every day we have the opportunity to either be a part of the solution or be a part of the problem. And it's easy to feel angry or respond in an emotional way to someone who has said something offensive to you or about you or someone that you care about or an idea that you feel strongly about. That's the easy route. But it adds more fuel to the fires that are driving us apart. The greater challenge that we have every day is to respond in a way that is constructive. It's not at all, I don't roll over when I have strong conversations. I have a set of values and principles that I believe strongly in, which is why I'm doing what I'm doing. But being able to have that conversation or speak with others who you know may not be in your camp, or you don't know how they feel about something. We can do this in our engagements online, our engagements in person. But this is especially important as we head into this election, which is critical. This election, for me, in my lifetime, is the most pivotal and important election that I've faced because the future of our country is at stake. it will require, as you know well, when the margins are so close and how these elections are decided, it will require every single American taking the future of our country into our own hands and taking ownership of our responsibility that we have as citizens to not only get informed, but to encourage those around us to make that informed decision. Again, it's not about a personality. You may like one person's style or not like another person's style or how they're saying something. Look at the contrast, and there's a very clear contrast between President Biden and President Trump. And when it comes right down to it, what are the things that matter to us most? Our fundamental rights and freedoms as Americans, the rights that we have to disagree with each other and know that you're not going to be retaliated against or being faced with censorship. Our rights to be able to make decisions for our families, for our children, for their education, the rights that we should have to know that our little girls are not going to be forced to compete against little boys in schools or have their futures undermined because of this insane trans ideology that's infecting our society. When we go down the list of these issues that impact every one of us as Americans, we have a responsibility to stop the insanity in this election so we can start to get our country back on track.
We've learned a lot at Heritage just in the last 3 or 4 months about how, as an unabashedly conservative organization, to talk to voters in the middle.
Yeah.
And look, we should have been doing this long ago, right? Sort of to your point. We have a tendency in American politics, whether it's Heritage or groups on the left or in the center, sort of to just preach to the choir.
Sure.
Because that's easy.
It is.
You've probably seen this in politics.
I've experienced it.
But not just for the election.
Yeah.
For all of the great reasons you mentioned, and I agree entirely, Tulsi. But far more importantly for us at Heritage, because we're so focused on rebuilding civil society, yeah. I sometimes surprise people when I say, it'd be nice to have a normal Democrat Party again.
Yes.
We need two normal political parties. I might disagree with one
yes.
entirely, but at least I know that it offers a valid, legitimate counterpoint or alternative on some issues, right? But a lot of Americans are saying, gosh, Kevin, I'm sure they say to you, gosh, Tulsi, I don't see how we get there. Mm. And so one of the questions I was really looking forward to asking you is, let's just posit that the election goes well, mm-hmm. as you and I would see it. Mm-hmm. Common sense candidates win.
Yes.
It's 2025. What do individual Americans need to do in their daily lives, in their political behavior, whatever it may be, that lets them know they're participating in the rebuilding of civil society? Because it kind of sounds academic when we say that.
Yeah, and too often people kind of throw their hands up at the election and say, well, you know, it's rigged. Once people are in office, they're there forever, and they just say, well, the politics don't really affect me. I'm so happy to hear about how your work is obviously focused on issues that are important during an election season, but it is the bigger mission and the bigger kind of transformation that we need to see in our society. And I think that there is a role for everyone, whether you're a teacher, you're a healthcare worker, you're a parent running for Board of Education. We see that ability for servant leaders in every aspect of our society to bring about, to set the example and to bring about that kind of change that we need to see. I always hesitate to use the term, different people use the term normal or the norms. You've been around Washington long enough to know that the norms of the Washington elite are exactly what we need to get away from. But the norms that were put in place by our founding fathers and what they envisioned with a limited government and respecting our individual liberties as Americans, that's the norm that we need to get back to. What can we do as individuals? Exercise our freedoms that are enshrined in our Bill of Rights and our Constitution on a daily basis. We cannot allow ourselves to be kowtowed into fear by those who are trying to take our freedoms away. You talked about being able to reach out to people who may not be your normal Heritage Foundation subscribers or supporters. I can't tell you just how important that is, and my own experience of being able to talk to folks who don't feel like they have a home in either party today, but obviously who care very much about many of the things that you and I care about, who are concerned about the direction that our country is headed in. And because of the hyperpolarization, the name calling that too often occurs, just like, I don't want any part of that. That seems nasty. That seems angry. It's like, it's not very pleasant or visionary. It's not hope inspiring. There is huge opportunity to be able to connect with people who want real solutions, who want to have that dialogue of ideas to see, okay, well, what ideas are you putting forward? Okay, what ideas are you putting forward? Let's have that dialogue and conversation and let the best idea win. Let the superior speech win them over. That's where I hope we can get back to as a country, because we will be better off as a people and as a country if we get there.
Washington,
I mean, when we get there.
Yeah, there, I like that.
There we go.
Washington elites, as you know better than anyone, are so condescending.
Yes.
Toward the American people generally. But one of the primary ways that I've observed in my short time in Washington is that Washington elites know the answer to everything. And, you know, this is coming from a limited government conservative, right? So I'm naturally going to say that, but I mean that more importantly than just that. Yeah. I mean that on behalf of the everyday American who says, whether they're a Republican or, you know, maybe they used to be a Democrat or in the center, they would say, there's just no way that if you're spending that much time in the nation's capital, you know what's going on in Iowa,
yeah,
or Nevada or Hawaii. It transcends politics, yeah, is the point. And what I've learned, especially in the last year of traveling the country on behalf of Heritage, is Americans across the political spectrum are craving a national conversation,
yeah,
not just about policy programs, which would sort of be the, you know, the Heritage focus, but on what they should aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what Americans have been telling us, Tulsi, in focus group after focus group, poll after poll, is that they see the American dream slipping away.
Yeah.
And I grew up at a time in the Deep South, and the first Republican in my family, although everyone was conservative.
Mm.
It's when we had two normal parties, right?
I
grew up at a time when every Democrat that I knew believed in the American dream. And they might have thought that government had a different role. I will get to a question here, I promise.
No.
But they, you can tell this is a
good
point of passion.
I like it.
They believed that, you know, maybe there's a different way that happens, but no one doubted that tomorrow when we woke up in the United States, that we had the potential as a country, as individuals, to reach for the stars.
Yeah.
And I think one of the rotten fruits of the Washington elites on both sides grabbing control of more of our everyday lives is that we're losing that American dream. You have spent, here's the question, you have spent more time in the last couple of years with the political right.
Mm-hmm.
And I admire that. What does the political right need to do better to help Americans understand the connection between that natural aspiration? I mean, here we are sitting in Reagan State in California,
yeah,
right? He embodied this, that aspiration that we should have every day, and what political elites in their state capital or the nation's capital need to do.
Yeah. So I want to just briefly comment on the Washington elite problem, because it is
Fine
a very
me.
Real one. You know, when you have people, and the first thought, the first example that came to mind as you were speaking was this whole nonsense with insider trading going on in broad daylight by members of Congress. This is something I introduced legislation on back when I was there to put an end to, saying if you are a member of Congress or the U.S. Senate, you, your spouse, your senior staffers are prohibited from trading in stocks, period, full stop. Perception is reality, and the perception is that you got inside information and that you're acting on that to personally benefit your own bank account. The fact that we have this going on a daily basis almost by Democrats and Republicans in Washington who see nothing wrong with it points to exactly the problem. They think that somehow there's special treatment for them, but they don't have any problem throwing other people in jail, literally in jail, for doing exactly what they are doing. The currency in Washington of, okay, well, you know, you're having dinner with the most popular influential journalist, or you're getting on the right TV shows, or you're going to the hot new embassy party, and those are the things that are more important to too many of those leaders in Washington than getting the heck out of Washington and going back to their home district, or going back to visit places like East Palestine in Ohio, or going and visiting the community of Lake George in Louisiana, who continues to suffer from the hurricane damage that they have there and not getting the support that they need, or my own home community in Lahaina on the island of Maui in Hawaii, a place where there are still thousands of people who are essentially homeless because their homes were destroyed in that horrific disaster. Get out into the country and don't just get on your little pulpit and give a speech. Listen. Listen to people. Don't think that you have the answer, because you can't unless you understand the problem first. I was invited to give a speech at CPAC in the summer of 2022. I was still a Democrat. Christy Noem is someone who's a good friend. We worked out together in the gym almost every morning when we were in Washington. She called me out of the blue one day and said, hey, you know, the organizers of CPAC asked me to reach out to you because they weren't sure if you would respond if they reached out to you directly, just to see if you'd be willing to go and speak. And I called her back and I just said, yeah, of course I would. I'm willing to go and talk to anybody, and I'm grateful to be invited. I told some of my Republican friends that I was going, and some of them were like, gosh, Tulsi, you're really brave. I'm a Republican, and I won't even go and speak at CPAC. So when I got there, it was interesting because Matt and Mercedes Schlapp, we were behind stage. I was about to go and speak at the Reagan dinner. And they're like, Tulsi, we want to walk you out ourselves because we have no idea how people are going to respond. And I laughed. I was wearing a white suit, and I was like, are they going to throw Rotten Tomatoes at me or what? And they were like, not joking. They're like,
They're dead serious.
They might. they were far more concerned than I was. Maybe I was being a little naive. But it was a beautiful experience because I delivered a speech about my own experiences and what we're talking about here today, about freedom and about how we as Americans have to come together to defend that freedom. And so the response that I got back, not only through applause, but I hung around and actually talked to folks afterward. It was very hope inspiring for me. So I'm meandering in my answer to your question now. Here's the closing thought about what can people on the political right do better. Be open and welcoming to those who may still have that Democrat label, knowing that in this competition of ideas and solutions to the great challenges that we all face as Americans, you have to allow people the space to listen, to learn, to benefit from new knowledge or new experiences, and also be willing to listen to where they're coming from, their experiences that may have informed their views that are different from yours. So the name calling, and I've been called them all, not only by Democrats, but from Republicans or conservatives as well, who see, who make a judgment about me because of a label. It's not constructive, it's not helpful, and in order for us to bring about the kind of change we need to see in the country, what's best for the country and the American people, we need to treat each other with respect and be welcoming of those who are open to what we have to share.
And recognize, as you no doubt know, but you also live by, the Reagan principle.
Yeah.
An 80% friend is not a 20% enemy.
That's right.
And we could use a heavier dose of that in modern politics. That's actually a great segue, as it turns out, to a question about foreign policy.
Yeah.
All of us at Heritage have been really gratified that at the same time, we as an institution have been talking about another Reagan principle, peace through strength, being threatened by the profligate spending, lack of strategy, interventionism, brought on mostly by the political right, to be honest, that you've been talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, and thank you for that, by the way. In fact, at Heritage, my great colleague, Dr. Victoria Coates, says, Kevin, We're neither doves nor hawks or owls. We want to be really sharp and keen about where we need to use lethal force. Yeah. And that's another way of putting what I gather is your own approach to foreign policy. It seems like the majority of Americans are with us collectively, yes, and that Washington elites, to some extent on both sides, are not listening to us. Do you see in American foreign policy, the Washington politics, but maybe also implemented abroad, that in fact this mindset is ultimately going to win the day, this more realistic mindset about being more limited with American power?
Yeah, you know, maybe traditionally or for some time it has been, you know, the quote-unquote neocon Republicans who have been consistently more quote-unquote hawkish. But unfortunately, and you know, Hillary Clinton is kind of the emblematic neocon on the Democrat side, and there are many, many others now that make up that pro- policemen of the world role of the U.S. government. So it is an unfortunate and serious problem that extends through both parties, who, even if they disagree on many things or most things, when it comes to writing blank checks to fund more wars that do not serve our national security interests and exact a huge toll and cost on the American people and my brothers and sisters in uniform, sadly, they have no qualms or hesitation. This was why I first ran for Congress in the first place after my two deployments to the Middle East. It is why I ran for president as a Democrat in 2020. And it is something, obviously, that's near and dear to my heart as someone who still continues to serve to this day. My job in the Army Reserve is a civil affairs officer, and we are most simply known as the warrior diplomats of the Army, understanding the unique role that we can play and help informing the commander about the impact of our decisions and actions on the people in countries where we may be operating or serving. Keeping that realist view is critical, both on the impact that we have here at home and in different parts of the world. I agree with you completely that the majority of the American people are sick and tired of interventionist wars that time after time are proven to be counter to our own national security interests, but also recognizing that unfortunately war is sometimes necessary and we will be ready to fight and win, but knowing that it must be the last resort. I am a little less optimistic that will become the prevailing norm in Washington because of the power of the military-industrial complex and how few, and I know this from firsthand experience of serving on the Armed Services Committee, the Foreign Affairs Committees, being on the House floor and seeing these really serious votes come before us and having members of Congress come up to me who say, hey, I have no idea what's going on. Tell me how I should vote on this thing. And the vote is like closing in 2 minutes. There is a lack of care by too many members of Congress around the very, very serious issue of war and peace, and who are willing to let lobbyists from the military-industrial complex tell them how to vote, rather than voting what's in the best interest of the American people, our national security, and prosperity. We cannot be prosperous as a country unless we are at peace. We've got a lot of work to do in that area, but it will require, and this is where, for those who are watching and listening, your role to play in this is choosing carefully who you vote for to represent you in Congress. We have few people of courage, as we've seen over these last several months, especially few people of courage willing to stand up against those neocons and the military-industrial complex and act in the best interests of the people. That's what we need more of.
Thank you. Quick but important last question.
Yes.
This is, say, directed to high school and college students.
Yeah.
Who want to love America, but America hasn't taught them well about our history,
so
an imperfect
true.
History, but a noble history.
Yeah.
Of diverse peoples. They know in their heart there's something good about America, but you know, what they've learned in their classrooms for the most part is to hate America. Speak to them, Tulsi, and tell them why as you mentioned in your book, you have this love for your country.
Well, one of the examples and words that I share in the book come from Martin Luther King Jr. When we look at the adversity that we face today, when we hear people who are telling us that America is not the land of the free, or it is not a country that should be celebrated, that the Star-Spangled Banner should not be something that's honored, we can find our inspiration from those who have faced far more adverse challenges and obstacles than we face here today to see, hey, how did they handle it? And it was amazing to me as I went back and reread many of the speeches that were given by Reverend Martin Luther King, how even as his very best friends were being killed during the civil rights movement, even by white police officers, he discouraged people from taking up arms and instead invoked the words of our founding fathers to inspire hope and to remind people of those words that all men are created equal, all of us endowed by those inalienable rights by our Creator. And he specifically said, yes, even the white man, even the black man, every single one of us. So even though our society has failed to teach our young people about the power and hope and opportunity in those founding documents, look back to some of those figures who we respect so dearly, who are invoked by people trying to tear our country apart. Don't let them dishonor people like Reverend King or President JFK or others, President Reagan and others who have led by example to show us what's possible. And let us be that fuel that can brighten that lamp of liberty that is flickering today. It is on us. No one else is going to do it for us. And if it goes out, it will be because we failed.
And that's our cultural inheritance, right? We have an obligation to sustain it.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Tulsi Gabbard,
for
joining
me. Thank you, Kevin. This has been wonderful.
If you haven't bought the book yet, you should go out and buy it, For Love of Country by Tulsi Gabbard. Great patriot, great stateswoman, dare I say. Again, thanks for joining me. Thanks for being part of The Kevin Roberts Show. We are going to take back this country. Keep your chin up.
The Kevin Roberts Show is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation. The executive producer is Crystal Kate Bonham. Sound design by Lauren Evans, Mark Guiney, and Tim Kennedy. For more information and to subscribe, please visit heritage.org.